Hello again and welcome back to Istros Conversations. We're going to be talking once again about the wonderful Slovenian novel Panorama by Dušan Šarota, which came out last November and which was just shortlisted for the Oxford Weidenfeld Translation Prize. Today we're joined by the translator Rawley Grau and by the editor Stephen Watts to have a closer look at that process of translation and how they worked together to render this quite unique and amazing text into English. Rawley and Stephen, I'm going to hand over to you now, so here we go.
Hello.
Hello, Rawley again. It's great to be in your company again. I'm thinking it's 7 or 8 months now since the book was published, so it's more like 9 months since the translation was finalised, and that's a sort of gap in time that leads to reflection. And I'm thinking back to the time when we were emailing each other very frequently over the editing, although I have to say again, I've said it before, that you know that your translation was so good that I don't think it needed a great deal of editing, but nonetheless I remember a very lovely process of interactive mailing and
yes, definitely.
Editing it. And I'm wondering if you can think back to that time and about the issues of translating a novel that whose strengths are in its different layers and the issues that that brings up in translation.
Yes. First, let me say this is probably the hardest translation effort that I've ever had. I've never translated a novel quite like this. And that has to do with the way the novel is written, the sentence structure. I mean, it gets down to the lyricism of the novel, the minute descriptions of things that are extremely elusive, the descriptions of clouds, of weather, of water falling on, of light falling on water,
of
changes, of memories, of changes in emotion. And so that would be difficult even in a traditional narrative, this kind of work. And combined with that, these things are presented in the form of narratives, of a continual narrative, essentially, which blends into other narratives, and sometimes you don't know which voice is speaking, and you don't know when the voice is speaking. So you have conversations that then drift into memories. And this was all very difficult. It's very beautiful. And I have to say that doing this translation, I started looking at things differently. There's a wonderful sense. I think I have it with other books. I've had it with other books that I've translated, where I feel like I'm inhabiting the book,
yes,
in a certain way, and inhabiting the author's mind to some degree. With this, it's there's a beautiful vision in the book, just a beautiful acceptance of what is happening around the narrator. And I started seeing clouds differently. I started seeing people differently. I started noticing things. And that was a great experience. In some ways, translating this book changed me, I think. And that's because of Dušan's beautiful writing, and even more his beautiful spirit as an author. I would have to say. The technical difficulties of the book are enormous in terms of just deciding which tenses to use when we went back of a discussion, should this be in the past perfect tense, I had done this, or should it just be I did this, or I have done this? And these are problems that Slovenes, for example, don't have to struggle with when they're writing, because they don't have the complexity of English tenses. So that was a technical problem. And there were other technical kinds of issues that were relatively easy to resolve, but probably the hardest thing in terms of these technical things is just to get the sense of the continual narrative. I mean, there are long sentences in this novel. There are sentences that extend over pages, and it's really like the waves on an ocean. In the ocean, they're coming and flowing, and rarely do you get to a point where you do have points, just not to frighten readers. You do have points where it comes to a full stop, and you can breathe in a sense. But there is this flow in the novel that is very important to capture. So that was a problem with English, how to make English do that in the way it's done in Slovenian.
But if and that's a really interesting description of the sort of swell and ocean flow of the narrative. But I suppose in a way we could think that translation is when the flow of that narrative hits the beach and bringing it across. And although you've talked about issues and difficulties, I sense also that there was some genuinely beautiful process in bringing the language of the original into English. I mean, you know,
it was profoundly rewarding to do. When I felt like I had captured something of that, there is a sense of you're not just you're doing. You're participating in the experience of writing in a way that is extremely gratifying and fulfilling. So is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Yes, but also my sense of the acts of translation with this novel were they were very deep acts of translation. You know, you can have a text and translate it, and it's a fairly straightforward process, and you're not necessarily involved. Whereas in this instance, and for me it's something essential to translation, it was a very deep involvement.
Well, it's... Yes, in the sense that...
It was a...
It's a multi-layered text, and to be... To render this into another language, the translator has to be aware of the layers and has to be aware of how the different voices are piled on top of each other in a way. So that was part of it. There was also times where, I mean, Dušan himself was helpful, where I would ask him about what is happening, and what's happening in the background. The things that perhaps he isn't describing in the novel, but that I wanted to know, you know, how did these relationships work out? Where did they come from? What are the histories? And maybe that's not necessary. Maybe it's just the way I approach the text, but...
I think it's a very valuable way of approaching
right,
it. I think it is
right,
necessary.
Right. But... So I had a sense of there, for example, there is the character Jeannie, the Albanian
yes.
immigrant to Ireland, and he describes, we never actually encounter her directly, but he describes a woman that he also has worked for as a guide named Jane, who is an American who has come to Ireland looking for her roots, essentially. And she comes twice, I think. She has two visits to Ireland. And they become very close, and he drives her around. And It's never made explicit, but at a certain point you realize that Jeannie is in love with Jane.
Yes.
And that she is not in love with him, and that she has other things that she is working
yes.
on in her own life. So there were things that had to be clarified, and then we learn that Jane has died at a certain point. And in the Slovene, it is that statement that Jane has died, it's said in a very, what is the word I'm thinking of? Not euphemistic, but elusive, elliptical way.
Yes.
It's like, Jane is no more.
Yeah.
And it's not clear. I mean, you could say, well, she stopped coming to Ireland. You know, she's no longer part of my life. Or, because Jeannie is the one who says this. So it's something he says. And I needed to know what exactly that meant when the Slovene writes that something like Jane ni več, Jane is no more. Does that mean that, you know, she died? And we never see her death. We see something where she collapses, and so we know that she's not well. But and so I had a conversation with Dušan about what happened to Jane. And he told me that he had actually written a scene where Jane dies in
yes.
the novel,
yes.
and then he took it out.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting, and I think, I don't remember how I decided to translate it. It might have been something like Jane is no more.
Yes,
I don't know.
I think it was Jane is no more.
Yeah, but I didn't want to say Jane passed away
no,
or Jane
no.
died. I didn't want to make it that explicit.
No,
so.
And I think we had some email correspondence
right,
about,
right.
you know, how it fitted best, and your choice, I think, was
right.
precisely
right.
The best one.
But
it's very interesting to hear that as a translator, you went to the author and almost sort of pulled out of him something that he had written into the novel, into his text, but then decided, for whatever reasons, wasn't quite appropriate. But it was clearly something he'd thought through and that you as translator had sensed.
And that is, in fact,
there.
A part of the structure of the
yeah.
Of the novel. Just as when we look at a building, there are things we see in the building
yes.
and there are
yes.
things we don't see. And the
yes.
building is held up by both things that we see and things we don't see.
It's
and
a sort of silent part of the novel.
Right.
It's not actually there,
right.
but you found it.
Right, and I think if you're trying to be faithful to the writing when you're translating, you need to know as much as you can about the text.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, a machine could, you know,
yeah.
just
yeah.
it's not. And
yeah.
this is an intensely lyrical novel, and it also has. It's a lyrical novel, but it's also a narrative, and you have several narratives that are interwoven, and it's also a novel that is being told by fallible people. And so there are actual mistakes in the novel, and this was something that we went back and forth on about how some names were spelled and other things. And something came up just the other day about one of the characters, a Serbian woman who lives in Sarajevo, refers to an organization that was La Benevolencia, and she mispronounces the name apparently because it's spelled incorrectly. And I discovered that she had spelled it that it was spelled incorrectly in the novel.
Yeah.
But I decided this was intentional and that it shows the way we make mistakes when, you know, she's not looking up the name. I might look up the name, but the character isn't going
yeah.
to look up
yeah.
the name and get the right spelling.
Yeah.
So, and these kinds of mistakes, some of them are intentional. There were a couple of things where I pointed something out to the author, and he said, I think you might have misinterpreted this. There was the name of a square in Antwerp. In the Slovene, it's called Grand Place,
yes.
and which is spelled in the French way,
yeah.
and I thought this is strange
yes.
that Antwerp, which is a Flemish town, a Dutch-speaking town, would have a French name for a square. And when I looked on a map, I saw there was a Grünplatz, which means green square.
Mm.
And I asked Dušan, do you want this to be Grand Place, as it was in the Slovene edition, or were you thinking of Grundplatz?
Yes. Yeah.
And he said, oh no, it should be Grundplatz. So we corrected that.
But you mentioned lyricism and the lyrical quality, and for me, one of the immense strengths of the book is that it's dealing with historical narratives on complicated interweaving and also separated levels, because the matter of exile and separation runs right through the text, but it's dealing with it in a lyrical way. So on the one hand, there's a narrative, and on the other hand, there's a lyric strength. I wanted to ask you whether, has your experience of translating poetry, which I know you've done, both from Russian but also from Slovenian writers, do you think that gave you a greater insight into the into Panorama, or a different ability to translate it?
Well, certainly just, I don't know if it was my experience with translating poetry, I would say it was my experience with poetry.
Yes.
Reading it and to some degree writing it and also translating it and I'm trying to understand it. Sure. Yes. So you become aware. I think rhythm is so important in translation, and I think it's so often when a translation doesn't quite succeed, it's often because it's lacks the rhythm of the original, the music and the pace, and sometimes
I think that's very
the
true.
The rhythm is more important sometimes even than capturing some of the semantic nuances.
I think what you say is equally true of prose and of poetry. It's one of the similarities of translating either. And Duchamp's novel is full of intricate rhythms and overlapping rhythms.
So let me just add this. Part of my process as a translator is to read my translation aloud. I mean, I think this is crucial to being able to create a successful work, is you have to hear it. You have to know that it can flow and that one sentence can move into the other, especially with this novel, where when there are periods, it's as if, you know, you've come to this point of rest. And in the Slovene version, they don't use semicolons. So this was my introduction. I made plentiful uses of semicolons, but not always. And there were times when the copy editor in me, which I am as well, sub editor in me, would want to put semicolons in between sentences, and I said, no, there can't be anything here, because it has to flow. You can't have a pause here. So I think punctuation is an important part of translation, and I think that people might forget that sometimes, that just being able to use, just as it's like scoring a film or scoring music, writing music, you need to know when to put the pauses in and how long the pauses should be, and this is what punctuation does. And so even at that level, I think it was important to hear the translation.
Can I ask you something else as well? Because in a novel like this, where so many different histories are coming into play, but are not necessarily explained or are not necessarily given particular prominence, how much did you have to research?
Oh, I want to know everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't necessarily think I need to know everything, but I want to know everything. Mm-hmm. So I Googled, well, for example, there are descriptions of towns, there are descriptions of where he's traveling. I was always looking on Google Maps. At times I used the street view, and so I could have that sense. I remember there's a description of when he drives into the town of Clifton, and he's describing a street that rises up, and then there's a gas station here, a petrol station, and another thing. And I actually did the street view so I could see what was he seeing when he came into Clifton. And he describes another point, he describes an Irish cross that stands at a fork in the road. And I found that cross on the street view. And this is because, again, I don't want to give the wrong idea. This is a work of fiction.
Yes.
So, though it's written as if it's not a work of fiction, it's written as if this is a writer who has different residencies and he's describing the people he meets on these residencies. And all of that is also true. And the people that, many of the people that are mentioned in this novel are real people. I actually found out who they were.
Yes,
Googled them and I found out that they...
And many of the photographs in the novel are of individuals.
He refers to another writer, Susanna, and who I know, who's a friend of mine, and I turn the page and there's a photo of my friend Susanna Tratnik, who's a wonderful Slovene novelist and prose writer herself.
Yeah.
So this is... So he's playing on that line between fiction and fact, but it is a creative work. And I think that, whether you want to define this as fact or fiction, there are facts in the novel, but he's also free to... He's free to give you things that are not facts. He describes something in Ghent which exists, the building exists, but it's not used the way that he claims it's being used. So.
Yeah, which is how he slightly adjusts both fact and fiction to blur the boundaries between them.
And to create his narrative, his weaving of narratives, if you were going to the history of the nuns who flee Ypres and come to Ireland.
Yeah.
I have no idea the degree to which, I mean, that is basically history, that is basically true, but when he talks about the specific stories of the nuns, I have no idea, I mean, how much of that has been invented.
But I also sensed in your translation that you did a lot of research into strands within the book, but that you also used some intuition within yourself as a translator to know how to weave it together. Maybe that's just my sense because of how it came across to me. I think that was very strong. And one of the reasons it makes a translation such a wonderful translation.
Well, I think you have to know, like I do a lot of research when I translate. And I like working with the author. I've done that with other books I've translated as well. And if I think that none of us is perfect, and I know on other works I've done where I've been more like an author, if I could do it again, I would change things. And there have been times where I've mentioned changing Grundplatz or Grundplatz to Grundplatz. And so I wasn't going to insist if Dusan said, no, I want that to be there, I would say, fine. I mean, but it's not so much, and again, I would say it's not so much my intuition as a translator, but my intuition as a reader, trying to understand the novel on that level. Of how it's structured, how it works, and so
maybe that shows that, you know, as has often been said, that the translator is the closest reader.
Oh, I think that's
that's
true.
I think you've read this novel very, very closely.
You have to, I think, to do any, you know, a good job of translation. You have to inhabit it in some way and inhabit. It's a strange experience because you feel a certain ownership for the novel then. I mean, I know that Dusan is a wonderful writer, and this is his book. These are his ideas. This is his creation. But in a way, you feel like you are vicariously part of that work as a translator. And they are your words. Yesterday when we were at the ceremony in Oxford for the Oxford Weidenfeld, and on the podium they were reading excerpts from the different novels that had been nominated, and they read an excerpt from Panorama. It was as if they were reading my words, and he read the passage, and I remember choosing those words. I remembered the specific words. I said, I remember coming up with that, because, you know, translating is always about making decisions, you know, and you have to decide, you know, this structure is the structure that I want, but I could have done this structure. This word is the word I want. I could have done another word. And so when you make a decision, when you say, this is the word I'm going to use, this is the grammatical structure I'm going to use, this is how I'm going to put these sentences together or separate them, there's an aspect of ownership that comes in. This is, I've taken responsibility for this. And so when the text was being read from the podium yesterday, it was, I could actually feel that I was sitting in front of my computer and coming up with these words. And that was this strange sense, because I don't want to claim ownership of the book in any way.
That's an interesting allusion to house or where you live. You don't have to own a house to live in it, but to me you've given a beautiful habitation to Dushan Saratar's Panorama in English.
Oh, well, thank you. I've been so touched by the reaction the book has received, and I think the great joy that a translator can have is that sense of bringing something good to the world. You know, you're a midwife in that sense. You've brought something to being, but you did not create it. And so I'm delighted for Dushan I hope that he will, you know, get the recognition that he deserves as an author, and especially translating from a so-called small language like Slovenian, where the writers are writing for a market of 2 million people, and at, you know, 2 million people, well, not everyone reads this kind of book, and so they're writing really for a very small market of several hundred people. And then when you can put that in a language like English, which then will be read not only by speakers of by English speakers in the UK and America, Canada, Australia, etc., but it will then also be read by Chinese and French speakers, people who know English. And so suddenly you have, you know, tens of millions of people who might be, who will now have this novel accessible to them. And
I think I'll finish there on the hope, in the hope, a publisher's hope of selling tens of millions of books.
Yes.
Well, let's end on that wonderful wish. Thank you so much, Rawley, for speaking so eloquently about this book and this translation, and Stephen, for drawing those thoughts out of Rawley. It was a lovely conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.